indigenous policy in Brazil under the Bolsonaro government. So the Bolsonaro government has is dismantling all structures of indigenous policies in Brazil. His government has been underfunding all sorts of enforcement operations. So today, the government is no longer carrying out social environmental enforcement of indigenous lands. There has been increased pressure from illegal markets within these lands. So if we look at the Vale do Javari indigenous land, this is the second largest indigenous territory in Brazil. It's a territory with the highest concentration of isolated indigenous peoples in the country. So this region is a heritage of humanity in environmental and in cultural terms. But unfortunately, under the Bolsonaro government, federal government has been doing nearly nothing to protect these lands. Quite on the contrary, it has transformed the federal indigenous agency, FUNAI, into an anti-indigenous bureaucracy that's been attacking indigenous rights, criminalizing indigenous leaders. And it's against this backdrop that indigenous groups in the Vale do Javari indigenous land and in other indigenous lands have been by themselves organizing to protect their territory. And this is what these surveillance groups are about: to register, to denounce the invasion of the territories, and to demand that government do its part to remove illegal occupants, illegal fishing people from indigenous lands. So it's in this context of supporting the surveillance, groups that Dom Phillips and that Bruno Pereira have disappeared. And we know that they had been receiving threats. We know that there are other people who are being threatened in this territory.
We want to thank you, Ana Alfinito, Brazil legal advisor for Amazon Watch, speaking to us from Sao Paulo. We'll continue to cover this case. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Finance Committee meets the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify that a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Still Here, a mini-festival of new works in progress. From Friday, June 10th to Saturday, June 18th in Southeast Portland. This mini-festival features artistic works from modern dance to motorcycles, inspired by the lived experiences of 10 artists in residence. Again, that's Still Here, a mini-festival of new works in progress, from Friday, June 10th to Saturday, June 18th in Southeast Portland. More information, including individual event details, can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, mistakes at the Clackamas County Elections Office delay some primary results until June 13th. Uvalde survivors testify before Congress. And the January 6th House Committee hearings go live this week. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, June 8th, 2022. I'm Josh Salem. Clackamas County primary election results won't be certified until the deadline on June 13th, nearly a month after voters cast their ballots. The problem stems from thousands of ballots that were printed with smeared barcodes,
meaning they had to be counted by hand. Many primary races were left hanging for over a week, but the Democratic primary race for State House District 38 is still too close to call. The races between Lake Oswego City Councilor Daniel Nguyen and school board member Neelam Gupta. The county mistakenly put Nguyen ahead by a large margin on the Secretary of State's website earlier in the count, but the latest figures have Nguyen ahead by just 14 votes. This may send the votes to an automatic recount, but the Secretary of State's office says they can't be sure until all the ballots are certified. The counting delays also impacted a slow count on the Congressional District 5th Democratic primary between incumbent Kurt Schrader and the ultimately victorious challenger, Jamie McLeod Skinner. Survivors of the recent school shooting in Uvalde, Texas, spoke to Congress about the tragedy they endured. 11-year-old survivor Mia Cirillo told the House Oversight Committee today that she covered herself in a friend's blood and played dead. A little later, she reached the cell phone of her murdered teacher and called the police. Her and others' testimonies seemed to have little effect on committee Republicans. James Comer, the Republican ranking member, said, quote, "Knee-jerk reactions to impose gun control policies that seek to curtail our constitutional right to bear arms are not the answer," end quote. Uvalde native and actor Matthew McConaughey, speaking in the White House briefing room yesterday, joined the call for several gun reforms. He told of speaking to a cosmetologist who had worked on the remains of the slaughtered children. He said, quote, "They needed extensive restoration. Why? Due to the exceptionally large exit wounds of an AR-15 rifle," end quote. The House has already passed bills to expand background checks for firearm purchases and increase the time gun sellers must wait for checks to be completed, and continues to work on other bills. But it is highly unlikely that these gun control measures will pass the Senate, because avoiding a filibuster requires 60 votes and there are only 50 Democratic senators. This Saturday, organizers have planned over 300 March for Our Lives rallies around the country. Suzanne Potter has more on the planning in California.
More than 300 marches are set for this Saturday, including dozens in California, all calling on Congress to tighten gun laws in the wake of an onslaught of mass shootings. Advocates are calling for a federal ban on assault weapons, a national gun and ammunition licensing system, a law to raise the age to buy a gun from 18 to 21, and a national red flag law. UC Berkeley sophomore Shadi Amansadeh is helping organize a rally in front of LA City Hall. She says young people need to vote, but also speak out at every opportunity.
Consistency with making your voice heard at every level of government is important. Reach out to teachers, teachers' unions, principals, administrators, PTA moms, student councils, because every little bit of action, no matter how small or how large, is a life saved.
Other gun safety proposals include a national gun buyback and disposal program and more investment in suicide prevention efforts. Opponents of stricter gun laws say they violate the rights of law-abiding gun owners and would do little to stem the violence. Some propose to arm more teachers and post more police officers at schools. Amansadeh points to the failures in Uvalde, Texas, that led law enforcement to stand outside the door of an elementary school for more than an hour as 19 children and two teachers perished. She says it's better to reach troubled kids before they turn to violence.
Why arm teachers when you can arm schools with psychologists? My high school had a part-time psychologist for about 1,200 kids. She was only there Friday mornings, and that was one of the good schools.
A list of events is online at marchforourlives.com. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen addresses Congress about inflation in primary results from congressional races around the country. With more on these stories, it's Mary Sherman with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
Inflation is really our top economic problem at this point, and that it's critical that we address it.
U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen told the Senate Finance Committee that record high inflation will linger. Yellen disputed claims that government spending is the cause, since inflation is high globally, and instead pointed to the COVID-19 pandemic and the war in Ukraine. Now to Tuesday's primary results from key congressional contests. In Iowa, Democrat Michael Franken will face seven-term Republican Senator Chuck Grassley in November And Republican Zach Nunn will run against the Democratic incumbent in the 3rd District. In Montana's newly created House District, former Trump cabinet member Ryan Zinke is expected to take the GOP nomination. And in the state's other district, Trump-backed freshman Congressman Matt Rosendale fended off 3 Republican challengers. Mississippi incumbents Republican Trent Kelly and Democrat Benny Thompson came out on top in their districts. Republican Stephen Palazzo is headed to a runoff, as well as incumbent Michael Guest, who is neck and neck with challenger Michael Cassidy. In New Jersey's 7th District, Representative Tom Malinowski, who narrowly won his second term, won the Democratic primary. In the gubernatorial primaries in New Mexico, former TV meteorologist Mark Ronchetti beat out 4 other Republicans to face Democratic incumbent Michelle Lujan Grisham. And Republicans in South Dakota approved Governor Kristi Noem's reelection effort. In California's election, officials predicted that just 30% of voters cast ballots, despite policies that maximize voting access. The White House brought some star power to its push for gun reform legislation. At Tuesday's press briefing, Academy Award winner Matthew McConaughey shared his experience talking with families following the recent school shooting in his hometown of Uvalde, Texas.
They want their children's dream to continue to accomplish something after they are gone. They want to make their loss of life matter.
Some reforms pushed by Democrats include a total ban on assault rifles such as AR-15s, which Republican Senate Minority Whip John Thune says is a challenging proposition.
In my state, they use them to shoot prairie dogs and, you know, other types of varmints. And so I think that there are legitimate reasons why people would want to have them.
The Senate is working on a bipartisan agreement on red flag laws, stronger background checks, and school security measures. The Department of Homeland Security is warning of a heightened threat environment in the coming months. Justin Herdman, former U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Ohio, told lawmakers at a hearing on domestic terrorism that federal law enforcement prioritize the threat before the motivation.
You look to the violent act, you look to the planning, and you look to the preparation. The ideology matters far less when you're trying to disrupt a terrorism event.
Potential targets listed include mass gatherings, faith-based institutions, schools, government facilities, and critical infrastructure. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our eTrust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The U.S. House Committee investigating the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol building will go public with its findings starting this week. A series of hearings will take place over the next several weeks, beginning on Thursday night. At that time, the 9-member panel will start by giving an overview of its 11-month investigation. The public hearing, unlike other committee hearings, will be a mixture of traditional testimony and a multimedia presentation. Up until now, more than 1,000 people have been interviewed by the panel, but only small fragments of testimony have been publicly available, mostly through court filings. The first of 6 hearings is set to go live at 8 p.m. ET on Thursday. Lawmakers plan to have witnesses testify and to display a series of images and exhibits relating to the lead-up to the insurrection and the actual attack. The committee has yet to publicly announce who is expected to testify Thursday. The Associated Press has stated that British filmmaker Nick Quested, who recorded members of the far-right Proud Boys extremist group as they stormed the building, and Carolyn Edwards, a U.S. Capitol police officer who was injured in the attack, will be among the witnesses. The committee is comprised of 7 Democrats and 2 Republicans. The panel's probe has so far focused on efforts by former President Trump to cast doubt on the election and halt the certification of President Joe Biden's victory, financing and organizing of Washington, D.C. rallies taking place before the attack, security failures by the Capitol Police and federal agencies, and the actions of the rioters themselves. The hearings are expected to be exhaustive, but are not the final word from the committee. It plans to release subsequent reports on its findings ahead of the midterm elections. Several major networks and cable news programs are expected to carry the first hearing live in its primetime slot. The committee is also expected to live stream it on C-SPAN and on its YouTube page. A report from the Surveillance Oversight Project, based in New York City, warns about the dangers of surveillance technology being used to surveil pregnant people. It urges lawmakers to take action to enact stronger privacy protections in the wake of the leaked Supreme Court opinion to overturn Roe v. Wade. Lily Bolke reports.
A new report sounds the alarm about surveillance technology that could be used to target pregnant people if and when Roe v. Wade is overturned. Since the leaked draft opinion from the Supreme Court, indicating at least five justices plan to overturn the landmark abortion decision, New York lawmakers have passed bills to protect abortion patients and providers and to limit the power of other states to extradite people who seek abortions in New York. Albert Fox Kahn with the Surveillance Technology Oversight Project co-authored the report. He says search engine tools such as geofence and keyword warrants already are used to track pregnant people and could be scaled up without Roe.
All of the apps on our phone that collect our data are one court order away from being turned into a policing tool. And while that's been the reality for countless Americans for years, that's going to be a life-changing threat for pregnant people in America.
The report points to a case in Mississippi where a woman's search history was used to charge her with second-degree murder after a miscarriage. Foxconn urges lawmakers to enact privacy protections to complement abortion protections. He notes a ban on geofence warrants is pending in the legislature. Foxconn says even if the bill to stop extraditions of abortion patients in New York is signed into law, law enforcement would still be able to share surveillance data with other jurisdictions.
Just as we've seen for years, that even when we claim to be a sanctuary city in New York City, our police data is still being used to target our undocumented neighbors.
A group of 42 lawmakers last month signed a letter to the CEO of Google, asking the company to stop collecting and retaining location data from its users. Foxconn adds this is just the latest warning since 9/11 that surveillance tools installed in the name of national security pose threats to personal privacy.
I think that this is really going to be an inflection point in the history of surveillance in America, because I think we can't have denial any longer about just how dangerous these surveillance technologies are.
This is Lily Bolke with New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators for transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The Saudi Arabian-backed LIV Golf Tour will have its first U.S. event at Pumpkin Ridge in North Plains outside Hillsboro, June 30th through July 2nd. The U.S. Professional Golf Association has banned participants in the tour from participating in PGA events because of Saudi Arabia's widespread political atrocities, from harsh discrimination and violence against women and LGBTQ plus people to the brutal murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Several top-name golfers, including Phil Mickelson, Dustin Johnson, and Bryson DeChambeau, have been enticed to join the tour with guaranteed paychecks of $1 million or more. The LIV website says, quote, "Our mission is to modernize and supercharge the game of professional golf through expanded opportunities for both players and fans alike." End quote. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report interview with Street Roots investigative reporter Piper McDaniel on Street Roots' new project tracking houseless camp sweeps. At 6, it's Rhythm Nation with Peter Marks. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be mostly cloudy with an overnight low of 57 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be mostly sunny with a high of 75. Today in history, in 2008, World Oceans Day was recognized by the United Nations. Each year has a different theme related to protection of the ocean and sustainable management of its resources. This year, the theme is revitalization, collective action for the ocean. The quote of the day is from Major League Baseball Hall of Fame pitcher Satchel Paige, who died on this day in 1982. Paige said, "Not to be cheered by praise, not to be grieved by blame, but to know thoroughly one's virtues or powers are the characteristics of an excellent man." The Flambeau Ojibwe members are looking to Flint corn as a staple food instead of wild rice, which is threatened by climate change. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Wild rice is in decline, so some members of the Lac des Flambeaux Ojibwe in Wisconsin are turning toward another traditional crop for sustenance. Flint corn. WXPR's Aaron Gottsacker visited the Golden Eagle Farm, where a community corn garden is in the works.
Flint corn, also known as calico corn or Indian corn, has multicolored kernels of deep purple, red, and gold. It's the type of corn cultivated by American Indian people hundreds of years ago to make hominy. In Lac des Flambeaux, the Ojibwe tribe used flint corn to supplement a diet of wild rice and venison.
If you went back 150, 200 years, our people didn't have pantries, but they had birch bark baskets. And in these birch bark baskets, in their food caches, there was both corn and wild rice.
Greg Johnson is a Lac des Flambeaux tribal member, cultural teacher, and artist. He says few tribal members still grow flint corn and make their own hominy, but with climate change disrupting wild rice growth, he's trying to bring the staple back.
Wild rice is in decline, and so I just thought back, you know, like back to the beginning, you know, what did our people do? This is probably what they would have done. They would have done the same thing. They would have had a garden that was just for everybody to share a part of. And so that's all we're trying to do. We're not trying to sell it. We're not trying to do anything other than provide food for our families and you know, maybe in some sense replace that wild rice that's been sustaining us forever.
Johnson and a dozen tribal members planted more than 40 rows of flint corn at the tribe's Golden Eagle Farm. When the corn is harvested in the fall, it'll be braided and hung up over the winter, then boiled with maple ash in the spring to enrich the corn and turn it into hominy. It's a practice that dates back centuries, but one Johnson hopes can help tribal members deal with the more recent challenge of climate change. I'm Aaron Gottsacker in Lac des Flambeaux.
Native cast of the new television series Dark Winds say the show is providing an opportunity to showcase more Native talent both on camera and behind the scenes. The drama follows tribal police on Navajo land in the 1970s based on books by the late non-Native author Tony Hillerman. Zahn McLarnon, lead actor, says Native people adapted this latest TV version of Hillerman's work from a Native lens, controlling the narrative.
We put together quite a team of Native writers, Native producers, Native directors, and Native crew, and Native consultants. So we were kind of telling Tony Hillerman's stories through a different perspective. I think it's a great step towards seeing Natives and their experience as normal, allowing the public and the audiences to see that Native culture is American culture. It is American history.
Fellow actor Jessica Madden agrees and points to Reservation Dogs and Rutherford Falls as other productions with Native representation.
We've kicked down the door, so now I feel that there's inevitably this responsibility to make sure those doors stay open, that this isn't just a trend in a moment in time, but that we actually, through the exposure that we're getting now, we're able to humanize Native people in a global way. You know, we still are a very small population in comparison to a lot of other cultures who get more exposure, whether that's in cinema or television or, you know, in any other facet.
The show had two Navajo cultural consultants, used a Native-owned studio, and filmed on Pueblo lands in New Mexico. The series premieres on AMC June 12th. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Home ownership for Native Americans lags behind other populations around the country. One Montana expert says banks are often reluctant to lend to people living on reservations. Eric Tegetoff has more on the story.
After a history of forcible removal from their land, Native Americans now struggle to own homes. Until recently, indigenous people had little recourse against discrimination in housing policies. The 1968 Fair Housing Act has helped. However, data from Prosperity Now shows only 45% of Native Americans in Montana own their homes, compared to nearly 70% of white residents. Daryl Amir is with the Native American Development Corporation, based in Billings. He says the pandemic and current housing crunch have made this issue worse.
Affordability, availability, substandard housing, just everything about the housing market is terrible on reservations. Housing is in dire straits right now on every reservation in Montana.
As a loan officer with the Native American Development Corporation, Lemire says housing is a big part of economic development. He says one priority should be to help prospective borrowers improve poor credit scores or negative credit reports, which otherwise can doom their chances of qualifying for a mortgage loan. Lemire says some major banks don't work with people on reservations. It's reminiscent of the practice of redlining, when banks would discriminate against people based on their race or neighborhood. He says there also are some legal differences for reservations.
They are considered sovereign countries. And some banks are reluctant to invest on reservations simply because of the foreclosure issue.
He explains part of the concern is that some tribes don't have foreclosure laws, so it can be more difficult for banks to recover their losses if a homeowner defaults. Some financial institutions are working with these borrowers to improve their chances, including the Native American Development Corporation. Lemire notes there's also First Tribal Lending, which can provide loans through the Section 184 Indian Home Loan Guarantee Program. It's a product of the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development.
A conventional bank would look at your credit score and look at your credit report. If it was bad, they would say, no, we can't give you a loan. But First Tribal Lending will work with you, so they do help people with compromised credit reports and credit histories.
HUD data from 2017 showed the program had guaranteed more than 37,000 loans. For Big Sky Connection, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
An increase in pedestrian fatalities in the U.S. has prompted law enforcement to plead with drivers to be more careful on the road. They say reminders are even more important as the weather warms up and more people are spending time outside. Mike Moen has more in South Dakota.
Summer is here, and South Dakota roads and intersections will likely see more pedestrians. And with larger pickup trucks and SUVs still prevalent, law enforcement officials urge drivers to be even more keenly aware of their surroundings. Its smaller population means South Dakota sees fewer pedestrian fatalities compared to other states. But the Governor's Highway Safety Association reports an 80% increase, reviewing data from 2020 to 2021. Highway Patrol Captain Robert Whistler says mid to large-sized vehicles are popular in the Midwest, and their frames present unique challenges to anyone driving them.
The height of the vehicle and then the body lines of the vehicle and then the cargo area of the vehicle all add to the inability to see directly around the vehicle.
Newer models are equipped with sensors, but safety experts warn of drivers becoming too reliant on technology when navigating intersections. A recent study by the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety notes these vehicles are more likely than cars to hit pedestrians when making turns. It coincides with a sharp increase in pedestrian deaths across the nation. Captain Brian Walls of the Pierre Police Department says new vehicles with all the bells and whistles are no replacement for a driver's standard safety practices.
If we just do like we used to do and, you know, make sure we look left and then look right and then look left again before we turn or before we go through an uncontrolled intersection, we can have that potential to avoid a collision with a pedestrian or another vehicle.
And Rapid City Police spokesperson Brendan Medina says the current trends are a good reminder for pedestrians to protect themselves.
If somebody feels that just by being in the crosswalk that they're immediately protected from all harm, that's not the case. They still have due diligence for their own safety to look both ways, make sure that oncoming traffic sees that they're in the crosswalk.
Mike Moen, Greater Dakota News Service.
European settlers drained forested wetlands in Virginia and North Carolina. Now projects are underway to restore natural water flow to the Great Dismal Swamp. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. The Great Dismal Swamp is a forested wetland in North Carolina and Virginia, and there's nothing dismal about the climate benefits it provides. The swampland is composed of peat, partly decayed plant matter that accumulates in wet conditions over thousands of years. It stores a lot of carbon. But in colonial times, people logged trees and dug ditches to drain some areas of the swamp. Michael Burchell of North Carolina State University says the changes had lasting impacts.
When you make these areas drier, microorganisms can break down the carbon in the soil at a faster rate,
releasing it to the atmosphere. What's more, dried out peat burns easily in a wildfire.
In these areas, under drier conditions, the peat itself can burn, and you can lose meters of peat during big fires.
That releases large amounts of carbon fast. But now swamp managers are re-wetting some of the dry areas. They've installed control structures on some ditches to redirect water to areas that were previously drained. Burchell and others have been studying the approach and found that it's an effective way to restore a more natural flow of water through the swamp. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
KB News poet Dan Raphael says full speed ahead for summer.
Let's celebrate summer. Rose Festival, Pride, outdoor concerts, share joy, build strength, and we're gonna need it. Travel to visit friends and family despite the profiteering gas companies. When demand exceeds supply, prices just keep rising. Likewise with food, in part because Ukraine grain can't make it to market since the Black Sea is littered with Soviet mines. Chunks of China are still shut down because of COVID, and where do most of our manufactured goods come from? Summer always brings climate surprises, wildfires, heat domes, unexpected flooding, something that never happened before to some major crop. At least there won't be any school shootings because the schools are closed, though 44% of Republicans say mass shootings are just part of living in a free society, freedom to spew 100 bullets in less than a minute. It's warm and sunny today. Every good time helps us get through the bad ones. Inside every silver lining, there's rarely a dark cloud. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOE Evening News for Wednesday, June 8th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael and myself, Josh Salem. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Suzanne Potter, Lily Bolke, Mary Sherman, Mike Moen, Antonio Gonzalez, Eric Tegetoff, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programming, including the Evening News, are supported by our members.